hard at revitalizing their language. This program is part of those efforts, and it originally aired in Ganasadage on RKR, reviving Ganasadage Radio.
CKUT Radio.
Radio. Sound waves in the air.
CKUT.
Montreal, Canada.
CKUT.
What's up, good people? To those of you listening wherever, whenever, whatever time it is, good morning, good evening, and good night. You are locked into another Tuesday evening with Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 FM. Soul P has been on the air since 1994. We bring you all the topics, the guests, the ups and downs, the highs and the lows of the black community here in Montreal, across Canada, and internationally. We have a beautiful evening of music and discussion lined up for you tonight. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 on your FM dial.
Temperature for them, see. Me know the man, fi but friend me fi envy. Yo, I force me see people around me so plenty, but me pocket na empty. Me needs fear, so Lord, yeah, me see them. I watch me to a cup now. I'ma see through me everything.
Yes, 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 we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and this evening with us we have Nagani, aka Sheree Lyon, who is a futurist, writer, director, producer, actress, and educator of Jamaican descent, aka Jamaica. She believes strongly that the ancestors of all people are beckoning us as a human society to choose different ways of addressing the larger solutions of today, rooted in reverence, truth, beauty, and respect for all life. Her work explores the intersections of neurodiversity, ancient wisdom, and modern contexts. As a student of flow mastery modalities, she honors life's capacity for transformation. Nagani, welcome, welcome, welcome to Soul Perspectives. I believe we had you a while back, maybe over,
I think so.
just about 10 years ago or so.
Wow, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I believe I do kind of remember that there was like a writer's circle and that you came on to the show. I believe. Maybe I'm dreaming. It could have been a dream. How are you doing?
I'm well. I'm super grateful, honored to be on the show today.
Great. It is good mm-hmm. to have you. So we can't not talk about the obvious, which is, you know, 2020 and 2021 and a good chunk of 2022 so thus far, we've been like in this pandemic-y situation. I mean, by now there's been some changes and some relaxation of the mask situation and stuff like that, but who knows how long that's going to last, because sometimes, as we say in Jamaica, them batty go twek twek. And, you know, people start freaking out for anything. So my question to you is, how has it been throughout this whole pandemic? Because it has taken a toll on a lot of people in different ways. Some people feel better, some people feel worse. But how has it been for you?
You know, it has been very complicated, you know. I think and that's probably the case for all of us, right? You know, when it came, like when we first walked into lockdown, it was actually quite fascinating because I had just moved into a community house with five others, mm-hmm. and we literally moved in 3 days before the lockdown.
Wow.
And one of her roommates, she was from Germany, and she was like, I think that I have to go to Germany because my parents did, like, I have to go to Germany, right? And we're like, so she had unpacked her whole room.
Right.
And then the day after she unpacked her whole room, she's like, I've got to go to Germany. Like, I got to dip out. And yeah. So it was just a lot of, you know, a lot of shift, a lot of change, a lot of, you know, it was a lot of quick, like just quickening of things, you know, but at the same time, it was a lot of grounding. Mm-hmm. And I'm grateful that at that time, as you know, because being in isolation, I'm a hermit by nature.
Right.
But having, you know, a house of women who were just like really about, you know, being tender and ensuring that everyone, you know, we were all good, you know, food was being cooked. Like, you know, we would, of course, tensions, of, you know, that was a reality. But I think that during the past couple of years, and especially in the beginning, it was quite interesting as everyone was kind of freaking out. It was kind of the first time in a long time that I didn't experience anxiety.
Oh, okay.
Which is really strange, you know? Mm-hmm. I think that in some ways, my body was like, for a couple years, just feeling kind of this essence of fear that was right. in the air that other people might have just been too busy to really kind of attune to.
Right.
And so when it happened, I was like, okay, all right. And it was also this, you know, interesting time to be, to, you know, I was tuning into what particular, you know, elders, how they were speaking about the situation, specifically from, you know, African spiritual tradition, mm-hmm. namely Ifa, Santeria, Lukumi, and, you know, hearing them talk about the fact that, you know, Earth creates, whether, you know, there's a whole thing of whether this was created naturally or if it was created in a lab in close to Wuhan, China, like, you know, there's all mm-hmm. these theories that are out there, but that there is this, when humanity needs to be humbled,
right,
something happens that should get us to like think about how are we moving. Mm-hmm. How are we, what decisions are we making in our daily lives? How are we building our society that is creating stress on the entire ecological system? Mm-hmm. And so it was really interesting to, on one hand, you know, notice that I wasn't buying things that I didn't need.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
I wasn't, I found myself not necessarily, you know, just seeing people to see people, okay. you know, even though I'm a hermit, you know, but like, I wasn't just hanging out just to hang out. Like I was very, it became very, deliberate.
Right.
Of who I was spending time with and who I was reaching out to, who I was inviting even into my space when, mm-hmm. you know, because, and then also too, as roommates living with five people, we were navigating different layers and levels to how we were, you know, interpreting the situation.
Right.
Do we want to, you know, completely shift our capacity? How do we deal with our fears and our anxieties? How do we deal with the fact that we are connected to different people? How do we, want to still also root in our sovereignty, mm-hmm. And our choice of how we want to move through this.
Right.
So, and it was interesting because for some of us, we like, it was like a spectrum, right? I kind of started to be like, we need to, you know, lock down, get our food, da-da-da, like, you know, and then as time went, I was like, you know what? Like my connection to the people that I love is more important to me mm-hmm. than isolating.
Right.
And it wasn't that I was just seeing a bunch of people. No, yeah. no, we had a bubble, you know, I had the way, you know, I have a bubble, but I was not going to give up my connections and my need and desire for connection, for closeness, for touch, for just being in the same space, mm-hmm. but it also created this ability to really not, I think it, for me, it put into perspective, what was I taking for granted before?
Right.
And what am I not willing to take for granted anymore? And it also, I would say, again, thinking of like, you know, being a person who's lived with anxiety and depression for a period of time, mm-hmm. or has experience of that, I should say, it actually even solidified more why it's important to actually push myself out of it, mm-hmm. mm-hmm. and to affirm that life is actually a beautiful experience that I get to project out particular energy, a particular emotion, particular, so that I can create more beauty, I can create more grace, I can create more ease for myself and for other people.
Right. Right. You mentioned really, really briefly about speaking to elders, and you mentioned three words in particular, Ifa, Santeria, and Lukumi. For those of us, I know what it is. I know what the T is. But for those of us who don't know, what are those words? What are those things that you mentioned earlier?
Mm-hmm. I just want to preface this and say that, I am not, so, you know, okay, I'll go from here. So mm-hmm. our ancestral, as African ascendant people, I say ascendant the way that.
Me too.
Yeah?
I don't like to say descended. I hate saying descended.
Yeah.
Because it makes no sense to me. Like, we're not going down, we're going up.
Right. Right. Yes. Yeah. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, and we also are that. We are also our ancestors. So I think what's so beautiful about Indigenous perspectives and knowledge is that it holds the complexity of time and space, you know, like it literally is what, you know, Einstein came and up against when he was doing his explorations in science.
Yeah.
So our, as African ascendant people, we had spiritual traditions that yes. predated Christianity. Now, I would also preface to say that, you know, Christianity has a lot of deep roots in African spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's, I don't necessarily, and as I'm learning more and I'm still very young and, mm-hmm. You know, I feel that there is a very close synergy, but not in the way that, you know, our people have syncretized it over time due to displacement and, you know, missionary colonization and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But Ifa is a spiritual tradition that is rooted in West Africa, namely in Nigeria. And it's actually interesting because there's a lot of research that might point to Ifa also being connected to ancient Egypt.
Okay.
So when ancient Egypt was happening, and I'm not saying I'm a scholar, so you know, if I'm not correct, please, anytime you hear anything, go do your own research.
Yeah. We just talked about that last night.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Definitely. Yeah,
because
we
take for granted, or was it the night before? I don't remember, but we often take for granted when someone says something, especially if that mm-hmm. person is someone that is an elder that we respect, we usually take it for granted, right? But mm-hmm. I've become a fact checker. Like, whenever someone says something to me, I'm like, mm-hmm. okay, I have to take this in the moment and I'll accept that you've said it, but that doesn't mean it's true.
So yeah.
Have to do research all the time.
Yeah.
All the time.
And sometimes you find like aspects that affirms it and aspects that don't affirm it. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's, but yes, I think in the research that I have done so far, there is the story that when, you know, Kemet, was at its peak, and this is before Roman and Greek, because the Romans were constantly trying to conquer and yeah. did conquer Egypt. But you know, when there was this exodus, when people needed to leave,
yeah.
there is a story that there were priests that actually moved over to West Africa.
Yeah.
And so anyway, so there is this lineage, and I think if you see the different African spiritual traditions, whether it is from Nigeria or if it's from South Africa or if it's from, Kenya, like there's a lot of similarities, and you will also then see the similarities even with Indigenous people elsewhere.
One of the things that I noticed when I was, because I've spent a long time studying Santeria specifically, Because something about it just resonated with me, and then I learned that because Santeria is the syncretization of Catholicism and Ifa, or like there are so many different names for it, but we'll go with Ifa since you said Ifa, and is the syncretization. But then I started looking at the Roman religion. And the Roman gods. And then I started looking at the Greek gods. And like already between the Greek and the Roman gods, there was always like this comparison, you know, Zeus and I don't know who's the head of the Roman gods, but there's always these comparisons and there's always these kind of lineages. And my favorite one to look at when comparing to Ifa is Norse mythology. And I feel like Norse mythology has like the most kind of almost direct lineage. You look at Elegua, who's the trickster god in Ifa, and you have Loki. You look at Thor, who is like one of the most popular gods in terms of well, now with
war.
With the MCU, you know, movies and stuff, like Thor is a popular Norse god. But Thor and Shango, they basically have the same kind of weapons. They deal with the same kind of, they deal with fire and lightning. And then you think about the Allfather Odin, and I think it's not Oludumare. Oludumare is the overarching
Obatala?
God. Obatala. You know, and it's like, I'm just like, something's kind of funny here.
I don't know. I think that these are archetypes of human experience.
Yeah.
And also because these are also elemental, right? So it's air, fire, water, metal, you know, like I believe that when you look at, we oftentimes, I feel as human beings in this modern era, and I feel like, I don't know if this is the case, you know, prior to the raiding of, you know, the libraries of Alexandria, you know, where, you know, at that time, knowledge was something that was like, you know, passed and it was shared constantly. And not from a place of, I own this, you know, it's like, oh, I have, this is our knowledge. What knowledge do you have? Let's share it. Right.
Yeah.
But I believe that every single earth-based culture, which is actually, I think, most of humanity, most of us have had that.
Yeah,
we see it in Celtic culture, we see it in Jude culture as well. You know, there is a understanding and a respect that there are these elemental beings, and they're connected to these energies and these experiences that we have as humans.
Yeah,
right. The need to defend and protect, the need to love, the need to, you know, be in the marketplace and offer your gifts and receive for your gifts. You know, and I actually believe that movement of time. I think for me, I think it's beautiful when peoples have created their own, and maybe it's the land. Right. Maybe it's the land that offers them the language, offers them, these are the archetypes that, you know, your culture is to work with. That I don't think it's more of, I don't think everything is necessarily stolen. Yes, there's a lot that has been.
Right.
I definitely know. But I think that there's some things that are actually organically created.
That's interesting, because I often think about ideas. And when I talk to people, I talk to people about this ideaverse. So there's this plane of existence where just ideas are just floating around, and everyone has access to them. So it sounds kind of like, without even knowing about my little theoretical thing, that it's the same thing when it comes to like a spiritual connection. It's like, there are these archetypes and people of different backgrounds and diverse origins kind of have the same connection to it. That's interesting. I don't want to say I never want to say that the religion is stolen, but I'm just like, there are things that are too obvious to be coincidences. Like, it can't be coincidental that you have a god that has a hammer, an axe hammer in Norse mythology, and then you have a god that has like an axe as their weapon in like African mythology and African religion.
Though, let's take the mythology out of the framework for a second. You can have a man or a woman or anybody, you know, non-binary, whomever, with a hammer here. And you can have someone with a hammer two doors down.
Yeah.
And you can have another person with a hammer all across the world. So these are tools,
Yeah, but their power set is also similar. Like,
what's that?
Their power set is also extremely similar. Their arrogance is also similar.
But the thing is, thunder is everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Storms are everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Bodies of water are everywhere.
Absolutely.
Right? And so it's like, what is the poetic, spiritual, metaphysical relationship that naturally evolves between humans and their environments?
Fair enough.
That's and that can be replicated everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Fair enough. I take it. I still kind of believe that these.
No, trust me. There are things definitely that Europe, you know, and right now I'm studying the Renaissance and the post-Enlightenment era.
Mm-hmm.
And what I am coming to, and this is also with the lovely academic work of Sylvia Winter.
Right.
Though definitely Europe at that time was, had benefited from taking a lot of incredible, important, complex, detailed knowledge in multiple fields.
Yep.
That gave them the opportunity to rise up to what they called the Renaissance and the Enlightenment.
Right.
Other people were already in the Renaissance and Enlightenment before that time.
A long time.
And with, you know, the violent destruction and interruption in our own cultural development due to colonization in 1492. And even prior to that, you know,
I was about to say, like, I mean, the burning down of the Library of Alexandria was like one of the like advances in science, technology, math, all that information was just gone and
stolen.
Stolen and destroyed, you know.
A lot of it stolen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just in case you're tuning in for the first time, our guest this evening is Negani, a.k.a. Sheree Lyon, who is a director, actress, a multitude of things. And we do have to take a quick break because, you know, got to pay some bills, got to play some music. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3. FM.
This is Luke D. Real food you want. Come to Mango Bay every day. Real food.
Mango Bay Restaurant, located in the heart of downtown Montreal, 1236 Mackay Street, Suite 201. For reservations, please call 514-875-7082 or visit mangobay.ca. Real food.
Let's get together and feel all right.
Yes, 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 we're back once again. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3. FM. Our guest this evening is Negani, also known as Sheree Lyon, who is a futurist, writer, director, producer, actress, and educator of Jamaican descent. Negani, thank you so much for being here. The conversation has been interesting. I love these conversations where we just kind of go off into the ether and talk about so many different topics. But you are a futurist, writer, director, producer, actress, and educator. Tell us a little bit about, because some people don't really understand what the term futurism is, and someone who considers themselves a futurist. So what is that?
Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like people will have different responses to that absolutely. Question. Because there's multiple approaches to interacting with our future.
Yep.
So for me, I would say that as a futurist, I feel like it's just it's almost like the passing on of the torch okay. of our ancestors who also were futurists. I think that, in order for us to have been able to triumph over the challenges of the past, you yeah. had to be a futurist.
Okay.
Right. I think about Harriet Tubman. I think about those of the Haitian Revolution. Queen Nanny, like, I feel like, those are the futurists that I look to, and be reminded by the power that we all have as individuals and as a collective mm-hmm. to create a better future,
Right.
To actually, so when I think about futurism, I feel about, okay, in this present moment, how can I create and influence and open a door and a pathway that can lead to a better experience for self and for others, and specifically, to be able to create more understanding.
Okay.
And also create sustainable solutions, like I think that, some aspects of futurism are transhumanist. Some aspects of transhumanism is this idea. So transhumanism is this idea that by combining humans with
technology.
Mm-hmm. So this is kind of almost like,
what Mr. Musk is trying to do.
Pardon?
Elon Musk, what he's trying to do, inserting a chip into the brain that records. Oh my God. Okay. Yeah.
I know mm-hmm. all of that. Right. That's not me. That's not the type of futurist or future that I'm going to consent to. I don't consent to that. It's right. not my future and I'm not going down it. I'm okay. not going down that path. But for some people, that is that's their thing. So, right. I think there's multiple ways to, I think we naturally are futurists too. Okay. Like, I think that if you're living on this planet right now, you are creating a future. And right. I think that there's, as human beings, we have this incredible gift called consciousness.
Okay.
And so oftentimes sometimes we have sovereignty over consciousness, and sometimes we are influenced greatly in our consciousness. Mm-hmm. And I feel that presently we're in this space where it's super essential that we remind ourselves that we are actually able to influence the future, and it is through how we envision, think, imagine, and speak. And also do and activate. Mm-hmm. So when I hear people say, things are just going to get worse and da da da, it's like, okay, like we need to sit with that and actually possibly do some inner work, yeah. To figure out where that comes from and clear that, because that's a vibration that you're actually emanating out.
Yeah.
And that's impacting because we are interconnected. So how do we clear these inner experiences, these inner fears, these inner anxieties,
yeah.
so that we can step into, okay, we've kind of mastered our inner, or at least close to, it's a constant journey, mm-hmm. but we can then emanate something else out so that the future that is being constructed
right.
is, yeah, yeah.
Right. So if I'm understanding correctly, it's you consider people who are doing anything that is for the, I don't even know if I can say the betterment, but anything that is for the evolution in the future of future generations can be considered a futurist for you.
For me.
Right.
For me. Yeah, I would say so. I mean, I definitely do believe, like, for me too, futurism combines, like, you know, metaphysics, it combines, you know, and maybe it's just because those are my interests, right? It combines, you know, ecology and, you know, spirituality, it combines these things for me. And I don't think that, you know, I think that there's technologies that are awesome. And there's technologies that can even, you know, increase our capacity for living well and living healthily. So, I'm not against technology. Though I am, there's limits. There should be limits.
Yes, absolutely. But I find one of the things, I've been having this discussion a lot lately, and I'm like, so much of our movies and television are, for me, shaping our future. Like,
just the fact that
we're here on, like, it's this pandemic. But even before the pandemic, we had Skype, we had all of these ways of communicating with people in different parts of the world that are very similar to Star Trek. Anybody who was a fan, a Trekkie, fan of Star Trek, you know, back in the day, whenever the two ships came together and they were about to have a collision or whatever, they're going to get into a fight, they always talk to each other on what? Zoom. They basically Zoomed each other, you know? And then they had these, most of the times the aliens weren't really speaking English. Like, we take it for granted because we're watching the TV show, but most of the time there was like a translator embedded into either their communicators or whatever the case may be. So the alien races were actually speaking a different language, and it was being translated directly into English in real time. And we have devices that are slowly right now, the devices that I've seen, like, you speak into it and then you press a button and it gets translated. But we're slowly getting to that point of, like, soon all you're going to have to do is put in your earbuds and you go into a certain space where people are speaking multiple languages and it's automatically translated. I mean, the UN has like, it's not the technology. There are people behind it. I am sure that as the technology evolves and gets stronger and stronger, it's going to be almost automatic. There's not going to be any delays. It's going to be, you put in your earbuds and real time, you're getting the language that you speak. You're getting the direct translation without any need for a pause or anything like that. And I feel like all of, like, as we talk about, you know, Elon Musk and, like, trying to put a chip into people's brains. We just had a whole series, Black Mirror, in which, I want to say, what, 80% of it had something to do with somebody having some kind of chip in their brain that could be controlled on the outside. I think about the episode where the mother put a chip in her child's brain, and then the child also almost became kind of like a sociopath at one point because she didn't experience fear, anything that would spike her cortisol levels, or I don't know what it was, but there was a spike in her stressors, and all of that was, like, muted in front of her eyes. So when she got older and the chip was turned off, she didn't have a reaction to violence. She didn't have a reaction to pornography. It was all kind of like, it was just a neutral thing. It was like, okay, well, let's do this then. And it's kind of exciting, but it's very scary at the same time to see all of this. I mean, even cell phones, you know, cell phones were on Star Trek back in the day. Like, Star Trek, open that up and talk to the person. Thousands of
miles. And hey, it's like, you know, when one of the main kind of understandings is that, like, you know, you think anything that comes into this physical world, it was first a thought.
Yes.
Right? It was first an idea.
Yes.
And so it would make sense that particular, specifically too, when it comes to technology, mm-hmm. that we would, when we see the, and also too, like, you know, more energy that that gets focused, you know, the kind of axiom, it grows where the attention goes, right? So,
okay. Say that again.
So energy flows where the attention goes.
Oh, okay. So, yes. 100%.
Right. So you have Star Trek, mm-hmm. right? And you have the cell phone in there. You have millions of people who are watching this. Their energy is coming into that to even further build the capacity for that to come into existence. Because right. when you have a bunch of people coming on, you're like, okay, whether or not they already had the technology and they were just showing it, and also too.
Yeah.
You know, if you look at the history of humanity, like at one point we did have technology that was even more advanced than the technology that we have now.
Okay.
But because of certain things that happened, you know, in our society and in relationship to other civilizations, mm-hmm. we kind of went into a dark era and then completely forgot about it. It's like right. this, right? And we've seen this in terms of like what happens when you go through, when a group goes through trauma.
Yeah.
As African people, when right. we were put under, when we had to deal with the bullshit
right.
of enslavement, right? You had generations of people who forgot that they were the descendants and ascendants of doctors, healers, technologists, you know, like, and they had to kind of start from scratch.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And some are still walking around, and again, no, absolutely no judgment, not knowing their power, not knowing their lineage, not knowing the gifts that pulsate through their DNA. Mm-hmm.
And often told at times that whatever they're feeling is like, it's not good. So, someone feeling certain ways, speaking to, is always muted because, and I blame Christianity. The Christianity, the colonizer friggin' religion, I blame them because there's always an element of oppression, not from the original, belief system, but the one that we learned through white people. I mean, I can say it through the white people them. So there's like this oppression of your spiritual self, and I talk often about when we're healing each other or when we're healing self, you know, there is the physical, there is the mental, but there's also the spiritual. And, you know, a lot of the time, our spiritual connection, like, you know, those little things, that little itch at the back of your head that tells you, maybe I shouldn't get off the metro right now because, you know, I'll get off later on and then I'll come and I'll circle around. Or today, you know, I should walk home instead of taking the bus. Or you know, you meet someone and you're just like, that vibe, not my vibe. And we often ignore those things because we get told, you know, don't judge a book by the cover. I'm like, judge the book by the cover. If you don't like the cover, don't buy the book. You know?
I think that taking it back to film and taking it back to what we are consuming and what we're deciding to consume. Like, I think that, again, going back to the idea of consciousness and back to this idea that, you know, our bodies quite naturally, no matter who you are, records information.
Yes.
Right? Yes. So what we consume, our bodies actually record it. It's information that gets stored somewhere.
Yes.
And so when we talk about, you know, I thought you were going to go here, but there were so many, like all the zombie apocalypse films. There have been a lot of films around a pandemic that everyone freaks the hell out.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting because I'm like, what would have happened if we had films that were like, okay, a pandemic could happen. All right. But this is actually a innovative way that people respond to it. Right. And actually see images of more harmonious ways of relating to one another. Seeing people, so what would it look like to see a film where people, right, were actually like instead of, you know, fighting over food or toilet paper, they created more local micro communities, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And so it's like, I feel that, and I actually kind of like want as storytellers mm-hmm. to kind of look at story as a means of creating our future mm-hmm. and thereby having the expanding our capacity to figure out how can we tell stories that actually that actually encourage human cohesion,
right?
That actually encourage our ability to be in the capacity to be in right relationship with our planet. And again, it's like no judgment. We all are working it out. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like there's certain things that I excel at, and certain things I'm like, ooh, like I want to get better at that, right? And
right.
But this idea that like, you know, even that's why I don't like watching things with slave narratives. With slave narratives.
Right.
It should have been done with Alex Haley's The Roots.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
That was detailed, historic. It didn't hold back anything,
nope.
You know? And so that should be the thing that, okay, Black History Month comes up. Maybe you have it for 1 week. You know what I mean?
Right.
And that's it. So that people still have access to the story, but right. We're not continuing. When I saw Janelle Monáe in Antebellum, I wanted to fucking, like, I wanted to literally.
Listen, I'm getting goosebumps.
I don't know if I just swore. I don't care.
It's all good.
I wanted
community
to
radio.
Throw my flipping computer. I was so pissed.
Listen, I watched that movie and I was so confused, and I was like, "What in the name of donkey is going on?" But yeah, I felt bamboozled when I watched that movie. But I love what you said about like, why don't we have movies that tell us how we thrive in these kind of situations? And that's one of the things that I noticed during the pandemic. I felt proud of us as human beings, like at least here in Montreal. I can't speak for the rest of the world because some people did freak out, that like we didn't completely descend into this like smashing buildings. Like all in almost every single pandemic based movie, whether it's as extreme as like a zombie apocalypse or as timid, quote unquote, as like a disease that's spreading, there's always like a breakdown of society and people start rioting and all of that, and like it's pandemonium. And I felt like when we were in this pandemic, the pandemonium part of it was more or less absent. Like, people did freak out and then they started buying toilet tissue, which made absolutely no sense to me because
you gotta wipe your ass, though. I mean, like, when you can't wipe your ass, it's like, oh shit.
I'm just like, oh, so long as there's water and soap, you're good, my
mm-hmm.
G.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and having lived through multiple hurricanes, having lived in Jamaica myself. Mm-hmm. You know, like, that is not a priority. The priority is food and clean water, you know, mm-hmm. and stuff to make sure that you have lighting in the night, which, mm-hmm. you know. But what I enjoyed, what I liked about it is the emphasis on the positivity in what you said. Because we as a society, I find, we thrive on negativity.
Me too.
Right? So we have this... mm-hmm. constant need for like negative reinforcement, and I think about relationships, and I was talking to my co-host Twyla Be Good about red flags and green flags. We had like this debate, and it's like I was saying that oftentimes when somebody has been in a traumatic relationship, regardless of whether that relationship was with a significant other or with their parents, or however the case may be, when they are fully absorbed into like having like these whole, all knowing these red flags and being able to identify these red flags, they find somebody that exhibits quote unquote green flags, mm-hmm. and they take those green flags and they interpret them as red flags. So green flags, like somebody being extremely attentive, respectful of your boundaries and stuff like that, then it becomes, oh, they're trying to manipulate me. You know, like we're constantly trying to find a negative in order to justify our fears of moving into a relationship or moving into a business or moving into something else. Like we're constantly living in this state of negativity, negative energy. And I just find it so interesting because we don't have movies like that. I mean, we have documentaries, which are kind of, there's a group of documentaries that are more on the positive side looking, but there's no fiction movies, and we all love fiction. Like it's just, it's a part of our life. Fiction is and even in, I was speaking to David Kalu, who's an author, back in April, and, you know, we were talking about his book, Jumbi in Town, and we were talking about the fact that in especially in Caribbean culture, instead of educating our children about the dark and the dangers that are out there, we tell them these stories to make them afraid to venture out there. Like in so many different cultures, not just Caribbean culture. I think about native cultures and even European cultures. Like they have the Baba Yaga in the forest that's going to come and capture
but
you.
But the Baba Yaga, it's really interesting what you say about the fact that oftentimes we do loop into the negative more often than we loop into the positive. And I think it comes again back to our consciousness and how we are able to wield it. And so as you were saying, like, yeah, trauma does impact how we see things, how we perceive things. And you know, I think animals, they do such a wonderful job of, like, at that moment, they shake it off and then they're over it, right? Yeah. But as humans, we go through it and we hold it because we have the capacity to, like, play things and loop things in our minds over and over again.
Wow. As you say that, it reminds me of this book called, maybe you're familiar with it, Don Miguel Ruiz's books, where he talks about the mastery of love, the four agreements, and so on and so forth. He says that, right? Like he says that I think it's in the book of the mastery of love, it's where when someone does something against us, we are the only group of animals that constantly replay and feel guilt or pain over and over and over again. We pay for it 1,000 times. Whereas, he gave the example of a dog whereby, you know, if you neglect the dog for a day, the dog is still going to love you, you know, the next day. They're not going to hold on to, you know, the day when you didn't, like, pet them and whatever. They're just going to, they love their master and so forth. So they're going to show love to their master. And that's an interesting thing because a lot of people hold on to, like, that fear of the pain that they felt in one previous relationship or however many previous relationships they have, and it prevents them from experiencing this new relationship in a loving way. I find that to be tragic. Interesting, but tragic at the same time. It's like, it's, how often do we hear, like, it's getting more and more difficult to find wholesome relationships because a lot of people are, like, their hackles are up. Everybody has their defenses up and they think it's boundaries, but it's they're just being very defensive about something that is not necessarily even true, you know? People.
And I think that's, like, why stories that bring us and have the balance between our pain and also the healing is so important. So when I did Delayed Echoes, which is a short film that I made back in 2018, it was, you know, it's a story about a young man who is on the autism spectrum.
Right.
And he is grieving the loss of his mother, you know, and he's holding on to these memories of her. But he's also having to do a very simple task that you and I probably can do with our eyes closed, which is, right, like putting on your own clothes.
Right.
But at the same time, he has this dream of wanting to work with horses and something that he's always wanted to do since he was really young.
Yeah.
And in the screening of this film, anytime that I've screened it, I've been able to get feedback from individuals who are on the autism spectrum that are considered to be nonverbal.
Okay.
I have gotten feedback from parents of people on the spectrum, and also of siblings of people on the spectrum who used to abuse their brother or their sister because they couldn't understand them.
Right.
What was important for me in making the film was, I mean, I think naturally because I am a person of African descent, I was going to, you know, have African people in the work, mm-hmm. Or Afro-Caribbean people in the work, but I wanted it to be universal. Right. And so when I had a private screening with a particular, family that actually helped in a very significant way for the film to be made.
Yeah.
It was an older white man who watched the film, and he had said like some really like microaggressive things to me. And I was like, okay, like that's interesting. Like, you know, and it's going to whoosh. Okay. Just wash that off. Right.
Yep. Yep.
But he was moved to tears,
mm-hmm.
because he saw his grandson in the character.
Right.
And so in that, just taking the example or the topic of our human experience of neurodiversity as an example, creating work that everybody could see themselves in,
mm-hmm.
everybody could position themselves in the context and reflect on their own experience. That to me is what I want to do with all my work.
Gotcha. So you want to provide a human experience that anyone, regardless of their race, their ethnicity, their gender, etc., can resonate with.
Exactly.
And you know, I love that you gave that little anecdote, because oftentimes in the movie industry, people talk about not telling black stories because they're not going to be relatable. There's not enough of an audience, et cetera, et cetera. But the truth of the matter is black stories are not limited to slavery. They're not limited to people being in the ghetto, people being gangsters. Mm-hmm. There's like our stories are as diverse as the people on the planet. And mm-hmm. anybody can relate to those stories. You mm-hmm. know, I think about the story, this movie was way back, I think in 2005 or 2006, and it was, I believe it was called Maya, and it was the story of a young girl in rural, I'm going to say South Asia to be like more politically inclusive or correct, and in their culture, once the girl experiences her first menstruation, they call in these priests, and for want of a better word, there's a whole lot, the priests just abuse the little girl sexually, and this is considered normal. And even though this story is in South Asia, sexual abuse on children is not something that's limited to children. To children in South Asia, and religious people abusing children sexually is not limited to South Asia. So, like, it is a universal story that is told through the lens of South Asian people, but anybody who is open to having a human experience can relate to that story and can be like, wow, this moves me to want to take action in some way, shape, or form. We do have to take a quick break, just in case you're tuning in for the first time. We're speaking to Nigani, also known as Sheree Lyon, and she is a futurist, writer, director, producer, actress, and educator. So we're going to go to a quick break, play some music,
pay some bills, keep it locked. You're listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 on your FM dial. Yes, 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 we're back, we're back, we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 on your FM dial. We are speaking to Nagani, a.k.a. Sheree Lyon, who is, and we want to put a spotlight on the fact that she is a director, producer, and actress right now because she did come out with a film in 2018 called... Oh my goodness, I don't have my notes. Please just help me out here.
Delayed echoes.
Here we go. Yeah.
I think you have.
I have too many screens open at the same time. That's what's going on. Delayed echoes, and you also your work explores intersections of neurodiversity. So could you tell us, because the story of Delayed Echoes, just really briefly, you were telling us about it before the break. It talks about the story of a young man who lies on he's on the autism spectrum, and he's dealing with the loss of his mother, the grief of the loss of his mother, and also trying to dealing with the desire to begin working with horses. What made you decide to explore a story about people who lie on the autism spectrum? Yeah, what made you decide to explore that story?
Mm-hmm. When I began, thanks for asking that question. When I began, before I wrote the script, I actually saw the main character and I couldn't get the image out of my head for about a week.
What do you mean you saw the main character?
I see things visually. So, I saw the movie. Like, I saw the movie in my mind.
Okay.
Or at least I saw the first kind of the first scene.
Right.
And it just didn't leave me. So I was like, okay, let me just sit down and see what this character has to say. And then that's when the first version of the script was made. And it was through the writing of the script that I realized that the character was someone who was on the autism spectrum.
Okay.
It's interesting because as a director, my favorite movies actually have been those that actually center people who are either like visibly on the spectrum or not. Right. So I think about, you know, Forrest Gump. I think about Powder. I think about Edward Scissorhands.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these stories about these incredibly empathetic characters and incredibly smart characters that mm-hmm. are just highly misunderstood.
Yes.
By even their families and other people. But they have this nugget of wisdom that nobody else can tap into.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, through writing the work, and also producing the work, it also kind of brought into like focus my own neurodiversity.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, ways that I move through the world as a very neurodivergent person. Like, you know, I don't see things the same way that, you know, or the structure of how things are set up. I don't do things according to the same way.
Yeah.
Now, I wouldn't say that I have a diagnosis of such. And I, to be honest, for me, I don't like diagnostic labels.
Right.
But that's for me. That's not the case for everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it did open up this beautiful realm of being able to connect with other neurodivergent folks, whether they're Asperger's or autistic. And then also, too, like, there's a broader and a little bit of a debate of, you know, who gets to fall underneath this scope.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, there is a particular experience of those who were, like, you know, had to deal with the bullying in the school because they got diagnosed at a young age and had to deal. And that's not my experience. Right. And so, but, you know, when I was making the film, I realized that, you know, it brought into these questions of, like, what's the purpose of children to their parents?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what gifts do children offer to their parents, and are their parents present enough to receive those gifts?
Right.
And if they're not, and they have all these other pressures, then how do you make it through? Right.
Mm-hmm.
There are certain aspects of myself that are definitely in the film. Like, there's a scene where, you know, as a kid, he was always in and out of, you know, getting diagnostics and going to hospitals and getting doctors. And that was my experience growing up, because I would have these random ass, like, neurological experiences that my doctors were like, we have no idea what's going on with you.
Right.
And so, you know, there were elements of my own lived experience and with my mom as a single mother, amazing single mother, that did get colored in the work.
Right.
But yeah, and I think that even my work that I've been developing now, it's again about identity. It's about, you know, we have a system, we have a society that tells us what normal is.
Yeah.
And it marginalizes and so